I might just mention that my wife and I happen to be in the Chattanooga church area at the time that they started building one of the largest bank buildings in the city of Chattanooga. And what was really interesting about it was that when they got up to whatever story it was pretty high, and they got up, but they had not put the top on the building yet. And they actually erected a Christmas tree. And I say Christmas tree because it's a pine tree or the fir tree there. They put that on top of the building, and they left that as part of the building until the top was on. And it actually came out in the newspaper locally. I couldn't believe that they would actually say some of the truth that we already know. But they overlooked the things that were absolutely wrong. Like, for instance, the reason of the trees is similar to the Japanese homes that are built. I don't know if you know, the Japanese homes have the end of the roof has a little thing that goes back up in the air. And that's so that whenever the demons come down, they slide down there and go right back up. They don't bother them, see. And so the same thing with the Xmas tree. It's akin to that in that that tree wards off the evil spirits to keep them from being in that building. Meanwhile, the carnal natures of people are going to be in that building. It's going to be bad, too, in developing and helping people spend their money or not spend their money, whatever it is. Anyway, I don't want to condemn or look down on any of that. I'm just giving you an accord of what people do in our society today. And I ask myself the question, and you ask yourself the question as well, why do they do it? Why do people do what they do that we see in our society today? Well, this world has a fervor, it seems, to obey and to serve and to do the pagan days of the world. I mean, they become enormous days of the saturation of money from people. I mean, more money is being made on all of these days, including the one that we observe as a result of this country, which is Thanksgiving Day, which was to be thankful to God. Wouldn't it be nice if the millions of dollars that was spent on Thanksgiving and so-called Black Friday, if all of that money was given to God? Millions and billions of dollars over just a couple of days during a week of the year. And then, of course, we're going to have quite a few more that's coming along that we're going to see, too, as well. And the things we see around us turn us off, and rightly so, because it's a spiritual thing. In other words, it's something that we understand and recognize that God is not for. It's very important to keep that in mind, too, as well, because what happens with people is that they gradually begin to take on, well, it wouldn't be so bad if I did this, which leads to something else. Well, you know, God understands my heart. And we can go on and on and on and show how many have drifted. Many have drifted, actually, from the observance of the holy days and the regular Sabbaths even. And what I'd like to speak about this time has to do with Hebrews, the 10th chapter. So if you'll turn to Hebrews, the 10th chapter, and we can ask ourselves the question, why do we assemble before God every Sabbath and every high Sabbath, the holy days, does that continue on throughout our entire life? I was struck by, in the Inner Court, that one of the ladies there mentioned that they had been in the church their whole life. So in some cases, we find some people can't look back and see, having been in the church all their life, the keeping of these days and the Xmas and Easter and all of the other things, because they've been in the church all their life and keeping God's laws and God's commandments, etc. and so on. But what was striking was that when we had a lot of the fallouts of the Church of God through the last 80 years, we find that we finally got to about 100, as I remember correctly, I hope it's correct in that sense, 150,000 people were attending the Feast of Tabernacles. Today, how many people attend the Feast of Tabernacles out of that 150,000? I believe we had around 10,000 some odd in the church that we are associated with. And the same thing with a couple of others we know. So that's about 30,000. What happened to the 100? What happened to the others? And are they still in vogue with observing and keeping and honoring God? Well, here in Hebrews, the 10th chapter, notice what it says in verse 22. Hebrews the 10th chapter, and beginning in verse 22, it says, "Let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith." And full assurance of faith, in faith, having our hearts sprinkled from the evil conscience or the guilt, and our bodies washed with pure water. And that was done, of course, through baptism. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering. Do we find at any time in any of our lives that we waver on anything that has to do with God's laws, commandments, statutes, and judgments? Or are we striving more to perfect ourselves in observing and keeping God's laws, commandments, and statutes, and judgments? Because there's going to come a time that we are going to, as one of the scriptures says, that we're going to judge angels. Do you know how to judge angels? Do we know how to judge angels? Do we know how to judge others that we will give them the opportunity to judge? And I ask myself the question whenever I saw the things happening in other parts of our nation, of where people were complaining about even a grand jury, saying the grand jury made wrong decisions. So here's a judgment. Here's a judgment by somebody who's talking about it even. And I asked myself the question, even when it was said, how would they fare if they were part of that grand jury? And what would they look to, and what laws would they actually look to be able to make that and to come to that decision? And it's the same thing with what we see happening in the world today. What would we do about, and how would we judge all the things that we see happening now? So many times, as far as Xmas coming up, it makes you want to destroy it. Makes you want to get rid of it. But then you have to realize and recognize that what about all the people who are involved? How would you approach that to be able to get across a good message to those people without destroying them mentally? What kind of words would you say to be able to help them to come to a better conclusion in their life of what they're doing? But notice what he goes on to say, as we hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering. For he is faithful that promised. So we always have in mind, we know that God will intervene. Yes, we have to go through some things first, but we know he will intervene soon. And so he goes on to say, let us consider one another to provoke. You know what the word provoke means in this case? It means to arouse. It means to excite. It means to stir up, to move, to incite, and to inflame others in the direction that we're walking. Inspire them, in other words, to go that far. Let us provoke unto love and to good works. And then it says something that some people don't like. And that is, it says, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, or as the matter of some have. But exhorting one another, so much the more as you see the day approaching. Because it gives an indictment of judgment, because it says, for if we sin willfully, if we sin willfully, knowing what we're doing, after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remains no more sacrifice for sins. But it says, but a certain fearful looking for the judgment and the fiery indignation which shall devour the adversary. And so when we think about assembling ourselves in the church of God from week to week, from Sabbath to Sabbath, and in all of the high days to be before God in his presence, then We are doing it because we want to do it and we love to do it and we know we're going to be inspired. What would keep us from doing that? I know in some cases some said, well, I couldn't go because I wasn't feeling too good. Was that mental or was that physical? And also, from the viewpoint that, yes, if you are really sick, you shouldn't carry that disease into the body of Jesus Christ. That's also another thing, too, as well, that we learn along the way. But this comes up all the time. People actually even write in from time to time and say, do we have to attend church every Sabbath? And you ask yourself the question, don't they enjoy being in the presence of God because that's where He is? So when you assemble on the Sabbath day and come to services, you are coming to be in the very presence of God our Father and Jesus Christ. So when you say, I don't want to go, what does that say? What goes through your mind as you're saying that? You get tired of it? Or you don't see the real reason for doing so? Like, for instance, we've heard the thoughts, and rightfully so to a certain degree, but the thoughts are, well, we've heard this and the same old thing over and over and over again now for 20 years. I'm tired of it. So why should I go? You go to be in the presence of the Father and Jesus Christ, and if that's what He sees and inspires, then that's what we need. That's what we need. We come before Him because we want to be in His presence, but also we want to have the fellowship of fellow God beings, meaning that is those who are going to become part of the very family of God. So it's more so than what we might think when we think about it. So Hebrews 10, 22 through 25 is telling us that we need to understand. We need to understand that we come because we want to, not because we're forced to. We come because we want to. Some would take this as, well, I'm being forced to come. I'm being threatened by the lake of fire. No, God just tells you in judgment, this is what's going to happen if you don't make a change in your life. Because the only reason we exist is because He created us to become part of His very family. So He's very interested in that, and He knows that because of the pulls of the flesh and the pulls of these other things, it's necessary. And of course, God winks at a lot of things that we do. It's interesting that through the years, we find even under the old covenant, they were people who were constantly trying to add to God's laws, God's word, and bringing in carnal and worldly festivals and ideas of festivity and ideas of the worshiping, like, for instance, the Queen of Heaven, offering hot cakes to the Queen of Heaven, which is what they do at Easter time in a different way, of course, but it's still the same thing. It's away from God because God didn't command that, nor did He ask for it as well. And also, too, most don't in this world don't know. I'd like to hear sometimes even read an article written sometimes say, why do people, and that's referring to the Protestant world and all the other peoples out there that have their churches, why is it that you believe there's a Queen of Heaven? Why is it that you believe that? Because Jesus said that when you're born into His family, there's neither male nor female. So there are no female Queen of Heavens that people worship. See, that's totally the opposite of what God is saying and doing. So we have to make sure that we do our part, and that's what this sermon is all about, is to remind us of what Satan is constantly doing to try to get us led astray from the important part of becoming part of the very family of God. Because he knows, and the demonic world does too as well, that we're going to judge them. We're going to judge them and even pronounce sentence on them. That's what judgment is all about, and that's why people go to court. They go to court, and judgment is made, and the penalty is paid. In some cases, life. Someone has to give their life at that point or be killed as a result of what they did. And what most don't realize today is God is a wonderful judge and a wonderful God being who has love for everyone. And yes, He may allow and even said to do that. And under the old covenant, it was more precise in what to do when someone did something. But also, He was the one who demonstrated through Jesus Christ that He has the power to resurrect. So it's not over with yet. It's not over with for all people that's ever been born. Because it says after the millennium, the rest of the dead is resurrected and brought back forth. Why? To give them opportunities to learn more. See, God is a very just and wonderful God who's going to give everyone a chance and an opportunity. But even more so than that, He wants the ones He created to be part of His family. That's what He wants. He wants family members. But we do have to go through certain things in this life in order to produce that. Let's go back to 1 Kings, the 12th chapter. 1 Kings, the 12th chapter. And let's see here concerning what some of the people did back at that time in the Old Testament. 1 Kings, the 12th chapter. If I can get my Bible to obey me here. First Kings, the 12th chapter. And beginning in verse 25. Notice what it says. Then Jeroboam. Now Jeroboam had been given the 10 tribes of Israel. There was a split in the house of Israel, and Jeroboam was given 10 tribes, and the other, I'd say actually 2.5 tribes, Judah and Benjamin, and part of the tribe of Levi, went to Jerusalem and stayed in Jerusalem. But notice the difference, and I think you can look back and see why also too, that we can look and see in the Jewish line that they were very dominant in trying to preserve. And even Ezra and Nehemiah came back and rebuilt the temple, and the laws of God were reenacted at that particular time. But the 10 tribes didn't do that. Now, they did occasionally, from time to time, they did. But it wasn't constant, you know, with them. And, of course, Judah sinned too, as well as you know, in the book of Ezekiel tells us that. But Jeroboam built Shechem in Mount Ephraim and dwelt therein, and went out from thence and built Penuel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, notice the attitude. You know, here's the one that God gave the power over those 10 tribes to be the king. But he said in his heart, now shall the kingdom return to the house of David. I guess maybe David was getting all the praise and all of the recognition or whatever. And if this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, or if they go up to the Feast of Tabernacles, why does Satan want to keep us from going up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles? Why does he want us to, you know, to make us not keep the regular Sabbath anymore or all the rest of the high days? See, because there's a reason for it. Notice going on. Then shall the heart of this people turn again to their Lord, to their God, even unto Rehoboam king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam king of Judah. In other words, they're re-establishing the whole house of Israel. Whereupon, what did the king do in order to keep that from happening? He took counsel and made some Christmas trees. Made 2 calves of gold. Same thing. Same thing. In other words, and said to them, it's too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Oh, so you don't need to go to Jerusalem anymore. But that's where God was, see, at that time. And behold your gods, O Israel, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. So all of a sudden now, gods, I didn't think it was gods that brought the house of Israel out of Egypt. It was God who did that. Now, I realize Jesus Christ was involved too as well, but see, it's a matter of recognizing that it was not the pagan gods or any other gods that did it. And he set one in Bethel and one in Dan. And those were the two extremes of the land of Israel at that time. To the north and to the south, these two tribes lived. And so therefore, you find that he set one in Bethel and one in Dan. I used to wonder, why would people try to bow down to and worship a gold engraving of an animal? I could never understand that. Why they would do that? The engraving of a bull, Well, it actually goes back to the cherubim, seraphim, and all of the angelic realm. When God said to Moses and said, "Get this message across to the house of Israel: Do not make any image of any of the things that I've created and made." But that's what we do. Like a tree, we make an image of an Xmas tree. We make images, you see, of all the things that God created and made. Now, a tree, in fact, is one so-called minister on TV said that. He said, "What's wrong with a tree?" He says, "God made the tree." Absolutely, but he didn't make the tree to be worshipped, or to be honored, or to have it in a place of honoring someone and attaching the name of Christ to it. Xmas, they change it to Christmas. In other words, Christ being a part of it. And said, we've left off with Christ being a part of it when Christ was never a part of it. Never, ever a part of it. But yet, you see, that's what the world believes. Why do they believe that? Why? Well, because you had some people like Jeroboam stand up and start putting things in place in this nation for people to worship and to honor. And they even have statues. They even have, in some churches, they have the statue of Mary that people spend all their time worshiping and bowing down to. Why do they do that? Where did that come from? And how did that get to be a part of the church? And why do they have, in the one place over there in Rome, the statue of Peter, where someone actually used the stepladder or whatever they use and climbed up and took a hacksaw and hacked a sort of a little niche in their statue of Peter, which they claim was the real statue of Peter that was made way back when, and put keys in its hand and saying, "Now this is the one who holds the keys to the kingdom." So everybody was coerced or was made to bow down to Peter. And if Peter were alive, boy, he would really get angry at that, people bowing down to him. And not only that, as my wife and I noticed, that when we looked down at the toes were totally worn off from people kissing that bronze statue. I mean, they were worn down to a nub. Have thousands and thousands of people who were taught to believe that bowing down and kissing the toes of that statue was going to gain them eternal life. What's that have to do with eternal life? Just kissing a toe of a statue. Nothing. And so therefore we have to realize that it became a sin, as it says in verse 30. This thing became a sin for the people who went to worship before the one, even to Dan. And he made a house of the high places, and he made his own priests. He didn't choose from the tribe of Levi necessarily at all. In fact, they brought a lot of people back in from, as we refer today, Iran, Iraq, and all those areas over there. He brought back people from there and made them the priests. We're kind of doing that today, I think. It seems like it anyway. We're gaining a lot of things out of the Middle East and not going against it as God would have us do. And we should hate it rather than try to let it be a part of us. In fact, that was one of the things that God actually instructed the house of Israel. He says, when you allow other peoples to come into the house of Israel and become part of the house of Israel, they cannot bring their gods in with them. They are to be refused and not allowed to be part of it unless they repent of their gods and the idolatry that they were trying to bring into Israel. Well, a lot of that was done, though. A lot of people did bring in their idols and their idolatry. And we at first, even in this country, were trying to keep people from doing that, but they said we can't keep different religions from coming in because that's how they came into this country, because they disagreed with the religions of England and some of the things that are happening over there. And so therefore, they made priests of the lowest of the people, which were not of the sons of Levi. They were not what God had said to do or what God had set up. And then in verse 32, even taking it worse, it says, Jeroboam ordained a feast in the eighth month. And on the 15th day of the month, like unto the feast that's in Judah. And he offered upon the altar, and so did he in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves that he had made. And he placed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he'd made. And so he offered upon the altar which he had made in Bethel the 15th day of the 8th month. Notice they kept the 15th, but they didn't keep the right month, did they? And even unto the month which he had devised of his own heart. He devised that of his own heart. And ordained a feast to the children of Israel, and he offered upon the altar and burnt incense to them for those pagan calves that they had created from the angelic realm, if you go back and see the whole story. So they were worshiping angelic beings.